This is the April 30 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Logan Kimmel. He's at Brochag. Arlen Suderman, too, joins us. He is at StoneX. And Ellen Dearden is here from Ag Review. Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Our theme music is written, performed, produced, and courtesy of Logan County, Illinois farmer Tim Gleason. Let's get a list of items that we ought to take up for the day. Logan Kimmel, I'll start with you. What's on your list?
As we're finishing out the month of April here, busy time for producers. Rains have come across, but a lot of activity in the fields. And I think it's important to see where these grain markets have come here in the last 2 weeks. There's some opportunities out there for folks that need to maybe catch up on some marketing or put together some ideas on some further out contracts that have recently presented themselves that we haven't really quite seen in the last few years. So I'd be happy to go over that on marketing.
Ellen Dearden, what's on your list for the day?
Well, funds have been continuing to plow money into the long side of corn, wheat, and soybeans. I'll be curious whether that continues, particularly as we get into the middle of the month meeting between the Chinese president and the U.S. president. I think that money flow is really a big factor in these markets anymore. We look at commodities now as investment tools, similar to what we'd look at as equities or bonds.
And Arlen Suderman from StoneX, your list includes?
Yeah, it's hard not to talk about what is the current status of the Iran war and what are the implications for these markets. But I think the next significant chapter may be the meeting of President Trump going to Beijing, and usually they don't have a summit without some type of an agreement. What could be in that agreement, and what are the implications for the commodity markets going forward?
Let's start there, because I believe, and you can correct me, it is set for mid-May. The 14th sticks in my mind, but I'm not certain that's the date.
Correct.
It is still on, or has not been at least canceled at this point. Do you think that it will take place?
I do, unless the Iran war is in a position at that time where President Trump feels like he needs to be in the Situation Room managing it. If we're still status quo where we are now, I think it'll happen. I believe that President Trump and President Xi both have a vested interest in it happening, and also in a trade agreement. I believe that President Xi really wants some concessions from President Trump to ease the pressure on his economy. And he knows that the ag sector is something that has been dear to President Trump. And so I think he will have an offer there in order to try to get some concessions from President Trump. I think negotiators are working on this on probably a daily basis now, even though formal negotiations aren't on a daily basis. As I look at it, I do not see any evidence that soybeans are getting any discussion for the current marketing year. Perhaps a bigger issue with soybeans is, do they renegotiate the 25 million net metric tons for next year? A, China doesn't have room in the reserve for 25 million metric tons additional. B, I don't think with our biofuel program that we'll have the 25 million metric tons to sell them. My balance sheet right now, I've got about 12 million metric tons, similar to what they took this year. I think they would buy beef, because if they're not going to be soybeans, they're going to have to offer something else. So what would it be? I think they would buy beef, but I don't think President Trump wants to give up any more beef to tighten our supplies and raise our prices ahead of the midterm elections. They're already buying pork. Perhaps they buy a little bit more, but I think possibilities really are wheat, milling quality wheat particularly. They're currently trying to roll about 40 million metric tons of older wheat out of their reserve. They may want to replace some of that with some milling quality wheat, perhaps add to the grain sorghum they're buying. But I think there's a possibility corn and or ethanol could be involved in there. That's something the market is not counting on right now. That's not a prediction, but I think that's a possibility that would have significant implications for the balance sheet if it were to happen.
Do you think that the used cooking oil that was coming in from China, I think that happened this week, might be in that bargaining chip because the renewable volume obligations that were updated don't really exclude them or keep them out? They go to a half RIN, so they're not as valuable until 2028. And would that be some way that the Chinese would be looking to push product here in trade for sales of beef or corn or those kinds of things back to that nation?
It's a possibility, yeah. Now, the 45Z does punish used cooking oil coming from China, but the door is still open. And frankly, if you look at how big the RVO is, we're in a position where we'll use up our domestic feedstock, plus we'll need imported feedstock, and we'll need imported finished fuel in order to meet the RVO as well. So the market's now trying to find that blend between all the subsidies and the tax credits of how much foreign feedstock do we let in, produce, and re-export perhaps, plus importing finished feedstock, finished fuel. But I think it could be part of those discussions as well. Ironically, we could end up importing finished biodiesel produced by Chinese companies, maybe not in China, maybe disguised so it doesn't look like China, but we may end up seeing some Chinese-owned companies that export finished product to us to help us meet our RVO this year.
Yeah, so for the RVO, it won't be until 2028, including even that biodiesel from other nations might not come in to help meet that need. That probably, I would think, Logan Kimmel, keep a lid on prices for soybeans, particularly as you listen to what Arlen has laid out as the need for soybeans going into China, our number one export, or had been our number one export marketplace. How do you see that playing out for the crop year that's taking place, starting with this crop going in the ground now?
Yeah, Arlen brings up a handful of good points. And I think when we look at the beans and just in regards to the meeting potentially with China, what does that mean for what's left of the old crop, but also the new crop? And I think the price action here on beans has told the story. We've had really 2 months of sideways consolidating in old crop soybeans since the large limit down day in the middle of March, that the market has stabilized and just gone absolutely sideways, nowhere for 2 months, with today and yesterday's price action putting us just at the very top of that range. I think what that's saying is the possibility of China coming in and buying more beans for old crop, the market doesn't see that amidst the recent corn and wheat rally. And even the new crop soybean rally, where you've seen these further out deferred contracts actually approach their highs from March. And I think that the price action or the traders are at least, kind of positioning for there might be a meeting, and there probably will be. But the likelihood of old crop purchases is getting fairly slim here. Whereas you look out to the deferreds, they built a little more premium. And I do think it's interesting or agree with Arlen on the corn commentary with potentially, if that's a possibility in trade agreement, I wonder if you've got to build a little premium in this corn market that's not priced in at these levels or with ethanol. So it's going to be headline driven, and it has been, but that barring a big change in the Iranian war, which could happen, I think that is what the market will be looking for here in the next 2 weeks, is what happens going into that meeting and what do they come away with.
Ellen Dearden, I'll bring you into the conversation now. You've been listening along as we've talked about the Iran war, some of the implications there, and how the two presidents, Xi and Trump, might deal with each other in China. What kinds of things do you think they will discuss?
I think that they will discuss more than just ag commodities. I think there will be a lot of time spent on other goods or services, and not as much on ag goods. as we farmers would like. I think that these markets are kind of in a wait-and-see mode. New crops certainly got some gains on these old crop months, particularly on the bean side of things. But I have to admit that the corn upside that we've seen in the last week's time, really the last 2 weeks' time, has outpaced my expectations for this time frame. But we are in a seasonal time frame to look to see new crop months work higher.
Well, I'll have to ask each of you at this point about new crop sales for corn, as the December contract did make new contract highs this week. Producers are in the field. Well, we're probably out of the field in many places at the moment, might have some time to think about making sales. The question is, should they? And as they look at the marketplace, they may be not as excited about that kind of move, particularly given the price of fertilizer now and what they expect it will be in the fall. Ellen, should producers sell now, new crop, or wait?
On the corn side, we're a little tentative at this stage of the game. If December corn should get above $5, and we came within a quarter of a cent of that on Thursday, your next upside objective is in that 520 to 525 range. So I'm a little hesitant to push sales beyond where we are, but we're already at 35% sold. On the bean side of things, 1180 has been an upside target for a lot of people, basis the November futures. Thing is, the basis is really, really wide on new crop fall sales. So even though we are at 50% sold, at this stage of the game, I'm not real anxious to be selling anymore until we see something new. We are using hedge to arrive sales.
Logan Kimmel, your thoughts?
Yeah, I would agree. We've, as the corn market to start has moved along here over the last 2 weeks, we've advised incrementing up on sales. That would include folks still holding on to old crop. Your 2026 production is an area that we've advised getting some work done. December corn just falling shy of $5 here on the board is an area to consider. But one other thing for folks that are going to utilize their bin space and have their inputs locked in here for this coming year, can start to look out to some of the further out months, just to point out March of 2027, 507 and a quarter, May at 514 and a half, and July corn at 518. Those areas, if depending on storage and interest in your inputs, it's going to be different from operation to operation, but they are providing some opportunities that we, you know, haven't seen here in the past few years for this time of the year. So we're in the seasonal time frame on the grain markets between now and the 4th of July. We do still have some upside targets, but I think having orders in along the way, same would go for the soybeans. The November contract, new crop poked above the March high here today. I think if you're looking out that far, HTAs with the wide basis makes sense here at this point. So while it is a busy time of the year, we've seen new crop markets move up and provide some opportunities to at least consider on incremental sales. We did put out our first 2027 small recommendation here on corn today. And the reason being is that far out with the tensions in the Middle East, I think producers need to give some time and thought here on, you know, where my input's going to be for 2027. The December contract did settle at $5 here today. So very small recommendations there. Just if you don't have a fertilizer bid yet, the unknowns that far out, you know, warrant going slow. But certainly something to keep an eye on here for grain producers, not just on 2026, but starting to look at 2027.
And Arlen Suderman, your thoughts?
Yeah, Ellen and Logan have made some excellent points, and I agree with them. What I would add is the fact that I think there's a large number of farmers out there who do not have marketing advisors working with them, who, based on the evidence we've seen, are sold at levels far below what they have both indicated. Those are the ones who I'd want to speak to now, particularly in light of the fact that we're moving into a what appears is going to be a strong El Nino year. And while 1983 was an exception, nearly every other year tended to have very good growing conditions. And in fact, Commodity Weather Group just released their outlook for the growing season, and it's looking mild and wet for the Midwest. And by wet, I don't mean excessively wet, but good rains. And that could have high yields. So what I'm saying is you may have more bushels than you think to sell, and that means we may be looking at much lower prices as the summer starts to unfold. So if you have lower sales on the books than what both Ellen and Logan have indicated, you probably need to be more aggressive at these price levels at getting started and hope that you sell the rest of the crop for more.
Arlen, how should producers think about their crop insurance that they've taken, particularly if they've taken the 90 or 95%, or maybe particularly if they've got a much lower number, and they are the folks that you're talking about, which have not made any decisions at this point, or who are not working with somebody like Ellen or Logan, many of the analysts that you hear here on WOLL, the bulk actually of producers do not, or do not trade, I would say. Cash sales are a different function probably. However, you know, 85% don't actually play in the marketplace. What advice do you give to them as it's related to the put that they do have in place, the underlying floor at this time?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. Because as you indicated, most all of them have the insurance, and they think, oh, that's my put option. That'll protect my bottom side. Therefore, I don't need to do anything now. But we're looking at prices above where those insurance rates were established, and that's a revenue, meaning bushels times price. And if we do see the increased bushels or above trend yield this year, that means it'll net out to an even lower price once you figure the revenue and on a per bushel basis. And so that's, you know, why give up something that's offered to you now that's above where that put option is at? And so I think that that's even more of an argument that you need to be doing something now when you can lock in revenue that is greater than what that insurance guarantees you.
Ellen, I want to come back to you. You mentioned something I think that is very important. There's a lot of money on the planet. The CME Group over the years has garnered much, much more of it. They are still a very small player in the very, very large money flow. How does that impact corn and soybeans, in your opinion, as the funds move in and out of them?
I think that a volume that funds provide gives opportunities as well as takes away opportunities. And it does move prices in bigger moves when they come. So maybe this upside we've seen in the corn market is a bit bigger than what the fundamentals could support over the last 2 weeks' time because of this investment money. I think that we sometimes grumble and moan about the funds, but I need to keep reminding folks that they do provide liquidity and they provide action to markets, which otherwise maybe even the bean market, which has been pretty steady, has had some higher highs and maybe some lower lows as well because of funds.
Logan Kimmel, I would expect that your training told you that these moves probably have greater volatility. How long will it take them to fall back, do you suppose, once the funds stop making the investments?
Well, I think that right now, as we discussed, the volatility that's still in place in the Middle East has certainly kept the spec fund money interested in the commodities. You know, whether that be looking at the heating oil, RBOB, crude oil, and our grains. And I think to look at markets and view opportunities. But yeah, you might be in the midst of that with the funds holding long positions on the grains. One other market to view fund money in right now is the cattle market, where they're heavily net long, and providing opportunities there along with fundamental reasons. But that can be taken away too. And we've actually seen that in the hog market, the spec funds building up a large long position. And then actually since February cut that position, and we've seen a decrease in hog prices with money flow leaving. So it's just a good example of while you see week over week COT reports, spec funds adding or staying long grains, you look at the price, and as we've discussed, the opportunities maybe to do some marketing off of that. A handful of big rains throughout June and July, if the crop gets planted, I'm guessing they might view that as a market to shed length, and as we've seen, maybe go net short. Usually that's going to be associated with lower prices. So it's something that producers need to keep in the back of their head on while they're, helping out the producer, so to speak, right now, or friendly. We've seen them go the other way and short aggressively on the grain side. And usually the opportunities for marketing are not associated with funds going short grains.
Arlen Suderman, I'd like to come back to the Mideast and the Strait of Hormuz, the issues that it creates across the planet, particularly related to the fuel supply, energy in general. Fertilizers are one thing. However, fuel supply is having an impact in the airline industry already. Even the price of fuel in the United States is up sharply for airliners. There will be at some point a slowdown, I think, in the economy because of continued prices. How much of a concern should farmers have about this?
Yeah, it's kind of give and take there, the good and the bad. What's been impressive is some of the recent economic data coming out showing how the economy has been gaining momentum during the war. Now, I don't think we have fully factored in the price increases for fuel yet and the impact on the economy. So that'll probably mitigate that to some extent as we go forward. But I think one of the things that's important to understand, as high as fuel prices are here in the United States, they're much higher elsewhere in the world, and it's having an implications for our markets. For example, and it's been 2-3 weeks since I heard this, that France was planning on reducing corn acres this year, not only because of high fertilizer prices, but because diesel prices are over $10 a gallon. And like I said, that was 2-3 weeks ago. And so we're looking at not just high prices overseas, especially in Asia, but to some extent Europe, but the lack of availability of fuel and fertilizer. We see airlines canceling half of their flights in some cases in Asia because of lack of jet fuel, or jet fuel just so plain expensive, it doesn't make sense to fly. And what happens when you get that kind of arbitrage between high prices in Asia and to some extent Europe and United States, is the United States increases exports and that increases U.S. prices. And so that gives us further risks of higher prices going forward. It's also an inflationary matter. So when you have inflation, as what we've heard Alan talk about, and I fully agree with her comments there, the funds want to own those commodity sectors that have the highest correlation with inflation, the consumer price index. And over the last 10 years, based on our studies, that's been the grain and oil seeds, followed by the energy prices. And so there is that inflation premium that's currently in there, as long as the funds believe that inflation is going higher. If the war ends tomorrow, that expectation could end. I don't expect it to end tomorrow, but whenever it does, they're suddenly going to say, oh, that is ending, and then they'll start selling. But for now, that's helping to elevate the floor under these markets. And fertilizer is probably going to be a 1-2 year longer term story. Energy is now more immediate. Fertilizer is more long term. Reducing the amount of production we have globally and starting to tighten up the global supplies. Right now, global supplies are ample. but that's probably going to be starting to shrink down. And that's also a factor in helping to support those new crop prices.
Ellen, could you help me out, maybe play the devil's advocate with me on this one and talk about, instead of increasing exports to the rest of the world, demand destruction that might take place as the rest of the world is spending so very much money on energy that they cut back on their food supply in general and what they're purchasing?
Well, you have to think about the politics of letting people not have enough food. I mean, it's just lethal. And I think that we will continue to see exports of grains and or meats, but maybe not to the same extent that we're seeing right now. But I believe that that will be the case. We are working in a deglobalized type marketplace, having come since COVID, but I think that could actually speed up some, but that doesn't mean that we're out of the export business. It's just going to be a softer side of demand.
Logan Kimmel, any thoughts from you on this topic area?
I think it's bigger picture, longer term, yeah, something to keep an eye on from a global perspective. You know, week to week, I still look at the export sales, and you know, at least on the corn side, things look still pretty steady. So, you know, keeping an eye on that week over week and see how that progresses, tied into the conflict in the Middle East and energy prices, certainly something to keep in mind.
Arlen, I'll return to you, but not put it in terms of demand destruction. What if it's stagflation instead, with higher energy prices, but level prices for commodities?
Well, I don't think we necessarily have anything here that justifies a bull market. I think we've increased the chances of a bull market with the developments we've had, but we haven't determined yet a bull market. But we have elevated the floor, and that has me a little less worried about the future, at least until the war is over and the funds start selling and liquidating positions. Demand destruction tends to start with the protein sector as we move from protein to a more starch diet, because starches tend to be cheaper. So that tends to support demand for the grains, particularly the food grains, while starting to hurt demand for the proteins. And ironically, here in the United States, demand for protein is at record levels, and is as much inflation as we have, the consumer continues to pay up for it. The steakhouses are still full. We haven't found that point yet where the consumers really pull back yet. That point may be there and coming, and that would make sense, but we haven't got there yet. It will reach that point in other places of the world much sooner than we will here.
So wheat and rice, in either case, might have upward potential. Soybeans, maybe even still, because it's used in so many different products. Corn, less so, because it would primarily be feeding a domestic and global supply of herds of cattle and poultry and hogs, I suppose. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's the way I would look at it, exactly. Now, the biofuel program plays into there with decreased supplies of fossil fuels. You're seeing a significant increase globally in interest in biofuels to try to stretch the fossil fuel supplies at this point. And so that's also creating some demand for corn as well as for the oil seeds. You know, how long will that last? That'll last as long as the fossil fuel situation is tight, and then that'll go away.
Ellen Dearden, I know you watched the beef cattle very closely and the livestock in general. What can you tell me about that market today?
It's pretty darn high. I know that, especially the feeder cattle. We had April live cattle and April feeders go off the board today, so you kind of have to throw those out the window. But this beef cattle, live cattle futures have just outpaced, I think, most everyone's expectation, and it may be a function of the long side of funds still being involved in live cattle and feeder cattle, not so much in the hogs. I'm just flabbergasted every time I look at cattle.
Let's get a final word from each of you. Logan Kimmel from Roach Ag, I'll start with you today.
Yeah, grain producers take a look at the time of the year, seasonality, and like we've talked about, the opportunities that I think we're in the middle of right now. I know it's a busy time of the year, but there's certainly some chances to get caught up if you feel you're in that camp and start penciling in, looking at your new crop for strategies and opportunities here in the marketplace as we enter the growing season, where there very well could be more opportunities in the next 2 or 3 months. But right now we've seen an increase in prices and one we should probably take advantage of.
Ellen Dearden from Ag Review, your final thoughts for the day?
We'd all been thinking that the way that we would, quote, solve the excessive amounts of global grains would be with a big weather problem. And maybe the lack of fertilizer is going to get part of that job done even this year, but it may not be a one-year problem, maybe more than one, maybe more than 2 year situation.
Interesting. Arlen Suderman, your thoughts and final words.
Yeah, I would agree with that and build on that, because that's exactly where I was going to go. As our fertilizer people are saying, their biggest concern is supplies for planting the 2027 crop. So keep that in mind from a long-term planning standpoint, not only from a price of corn standpoint, as we're seeing global acreage start to decrease and maybe yield start to decrease, but also from any opportunities you may have on price dips along the way to perhaps price in some 2027 fertilizer supplies for putting on this fall after harvest or whatever it may be.
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may listen to the whole of the program anytime you'd like. You can do that at willag.org. That's willag.org. Our thanks go to our panelists this week, including Ellen Dearden, Logan Kimmel, and Arlen Suderman. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.